You're listening to Orange County's only station with critical business information, Critical Mass, with your host, Rick Franzi.
Well, surprise, surprise, it's not Rick Franzi today. It's his producer, Paul Roberts, coming from behind the microphone, or behind the curtain in front of the microphone. That's probably a better way to put it here. If you haven't heard this show before, you're in for a treat. We talk to business owners all across the country, not just here in Southern California where the station is based, but all across the country, trying to uncover what's working, what's not working in this crazy economy. And thus the name of the show, Coast to Coast. We believe, on this show in particular, that you can learn from the experiences of others. That's why this show is sponsored by Renaissance Executive Forums, which is, after all, a peer group, a CEO peer group, where you can, once a month, get together with a group of peers and in non-competitive businesses, obviously, and in a very safe and in a very secure and in a very private atmosphere, let your hair down and talk about what's bothering you, what's keeping you up at night, what can't you figure out, or conversely, share with your peers what's working for you. And through that, we all learn to grow our businesses. So, with that in mind, I want to welcome our guest today from San Antonio. Normally, I have two guests today, but we're privileged to spend some time with just one guest this afternoon. And that person is Jose Sena. Did I say your name right, Jose?
Pretty close, Sena.
Sena. Okay. Why did I wanted to put a Hispanic accent. I wanted to make it Sena or something here. I live in Southern California. I want to practice my Spanish here.
Yeah. Well, a lot of people think that the N has a little line on the top of the N, so that's why they get confused a little bit.
I get it here. All right. Well, Sena, Jose Sena, and you are the CEO and president of Blue Clover, which is a branding company, as I understand it. Is that correct?
That is correct.
All right, we're going to talk a lot about branding here this afternoon, because everybody, that's a buzzword. When you hear the word branding, everybody's ears perk up. And yet, I'm not really sure most people really know what branding is. So give me your definition. What is branding?
Yeah, well, first, thanks for inviting on the show. It's a lot of fun and a privilege and honor to be invited. Regarding your question, branding is defined so differently by everybody and peer groups across the country.
It sure is.
And we define it as the overall experience that a person, a vendor, a stakeholder has when they come across your brand or your name.
The overall experience. So it's more than just your logo and the cute, catchy name of your company here.
Absolutely. I mean, all of these elements contribute or add to an overall experience. And it's all the way from how the phone is answered to your receptionist, to how your clients get treated, to how your vendors get treated, to how your employees get treated, to the reputation the brand develops, and how does that translate in your overall messaging. So we put all of these things into branding.
I've heard it described that branding is the emotion attached to your company, which is sort of what you're saying. You know, what do people think of? What do they feel when that name is mentioned? Do they wince and say, oh, those guys? Or do they go, yeah, that's, oh, there's the company. You know, like when you say Harley Davidson, that's not just a motorcycle. That has all sorts of images attached to it, you know. I'm in my mid-50s. I'm a rebel without a cause. I'm riding down the road. I'm still young or whatever, you know. It's all of that stuff wrapped up. And that is not an easy thing to figure out, is it?
No, not at all. And it takes a lot of time.
And so many people, I was just going to say, so many people think it's just the logo. They spend all the time coming up with a clever name for their company and a cute logo, and they call it a day. They think that's it. What else, what other elements do you bring to that? What other elements? I mean, I'm sure that's part of it. They've got to come up with the right image and the right name that conveys the right impression. But give me some other ideas of what you do to help build brands.
Absolutely. Well, the logo, the tagline, the catchphrase, as you mentioned, for us, that's the end result of a strategic thought process. So So from our perspective, we don't start with the logo. We don't start with the line. Like, that's actually the last thing that we do.
Interesting.
So,
okay.
So what we do, on our approach, it's all based on proper research. So the most important thing that we look at is we like to interview, several people within the company to understand how do people internally define a company. Then we ask the authorization or the ability to interview some of their clients, existing clients, potential clients, and even past clients that left that particular company for any particular reason. That allows us, again, to gather a whole bunch of information. So once we have that, then we look at competitors, and then we understand how do they position themselves, and we like to compare typically around five of them. And then we try to understand based on just, online research and brochure and whatnot, what is their dramatic difference, what are they pushing, what are they hanging their hats on, etc. So after we look at that, then we also need to understand, okay, who is our audience and how do they behave and how do they like to be communicated to. So if you're talking about a technology company, it's very different than if you're talking to a financial institution. So you need to understand who is your audience, and those audience have different profiles. So you have to create strategies and communication tools that address the pain points of this particular audience. So this whole process for us typically takes about 4 to 6 weeks.
Wow.
And then we come and then we present to our client where we think that their brand is today versus where we think that they ought to be versus where we think that they should head towards. So very futuristic as well. Mm-hmm. And then based on that and having meetings and getting some feedback and validating our strategy, then the messaging, the logo, the catchphrase, all those things are deliverables that come out of this thorough thought process and research.
Interesting. Well, I mentioned earlier, and I'll say it again, I mentioned to you earlier offline, and I'll say it for our audience here, that my background before I got into this producing shows for this radio network was in public relations, and from that I branched into corporate marketing. I got pulled into it because so many times I would come in and I'd say, what's the story that you want to promote? What is it that you want to see appear in a newspaper, a magazine, or radio show? And they'd tell me various things about their product and all that. And then I'd start to look at all their overall image, their overall marketing, and I'd say, gee, your logo looks really very traditional and very solid, but your ads all look very clever and funny, and your stores look very expensive and high-tech, and your website has flames on it, and what were you thinking? Well, my cousin did this, and 2 years ago we made the brochure, and last week my cousin made the website, and my wife likes the stores to look fancy, but we're always pushing low price. I said, you're confusing the customer here. You're confusing me. I don't know what you're all about here. Do you ever experience that?
Oh, absolutely. We come across it all the time. You can't be everything to anybody, and most successful brands, hang their hats on, again, something that they truthfully believe. Obviously, all of it connotates an emotion, but, you want to be deep and narrow. And what I mean with that is that you want to go deep when it comes to the communication channels, but narrow when it comes into the focus.
I couldn't agree more, because too many times people come up with these vague names and these vague ideas, and we're going to sell stuff to everybody. And I say, if you sell stuff to everybody, you're going to end up selling stuff to nobody. Because when people go, particularly in this age, when they go search for you on the internet, they don't type, show me everything. Show me every widget manufacturer. Now, they're looking for a specific type of widget or a specific type of service or a specific type of product or company. And if you're too generic and too broad, I don't think you'll succeed in this market. Do you agree with that, or am I off base?
No, I don't think you're off base at all. I completely agree with your statement there. And then just to add, there's so much noise also with social media and technology. So if you start really not having a focus or strategic thought process, it's so easy to be, going down for so many verticals and down so many different rabbit holes, that may be completely pointless. So, and again, social media contributes to that and all that entails. And, you have mobile and you have had. So there's so many things that you really just need to think very, very well, to think, again, very strategically and focused, versus just kind of having a shotgun approach and everything you want or you think of.
And I think you touched on something that I experienced a lot, and I still see a lot of, and that is when they get into... I'll back up. My main focus was what they now call SMB, small to mid-sized businesses. Yep. And everybody defines that differently, but I'm going to say it's a business that's anywhere from, I don't know, $5 million in gross revenue up to $50 million. Some people take that all the way up to $200 million. But it somewhere in that neighborhood, they've gotten big enough and they've gotten successful and they're doing things and they're starting to branch off in lots of different directions here. And that's when they get lost. And they get particularly lost, in my opinion, because they often don't have an internal document that guides them. They don't have an internal... They might have a mission statement that they wrote up and put in a drawer somewhere, but there isn't a marketing plan. There isn't a marketing message. There isn't a clear focus anymore about what we're doing. We do this, and we also do this, and sometimes we do this, and if you pay us, we'll also do this. Do you run into that confusion a lot when you go out there?
Yeah, absolutely. Not only in the marketing plan, you know, in our version we call it the roadmap, but also just in an overall strategic plan for the company. I mean, you know, a lot of people have all these business plans that is pages and pages long, and, you know, you use it once a year for the company annual retreat, and then it ends up in the drawer, and you kind of dump it off.
Absolutely. Amen.
When next year comes again. So from that perspective, the same thing happens with the roadmaps or the marketing plans. They do this very big to-do with marketing plans, and you know, nobody follows it, but the problem is because it's too complicated.
Yes.
So, you know, we believe in simplicity. So at the end of the day, when we're done with our process, we actually have a one page that talks about our core differences, where do we stand, what's our message, what do we believe in, what's our elevator pitch, what are our values, why do we stand behind those values, and we need to justify those values, what is the context and the language and the tone of the multiple personas that we focus on, and all this is in one piece of paper. Mm-hmm. And then when it comes to the corporate strategic plan, I mean, the best one that I've seen out there that I definitely hang my hat on is, you know, Vern Harnish, Mastering the Rockefeller Habit.
Yeah, right.
One-page strategic plan where you get to see the entire company's vision in one piece of paper. And I think that human beings lend themselves it's human nature to feel part of something that people know where we're going.
Yeah.
And I think that that's part of building a brand and building a company. And if you have the right elements and not try to complicate it, I think you're there. And I think oftentimes, and believe it or not, is oftentimes within the executive team, they want to put so much time and effort, and rightfully so. It's not that you don't want to take these things seriously, but then you tend to overcomplicate it. And then you come with something that is not understandable by the general public. Chance is so great and fascinating to do all these interviews with clients and other employees throughout the company, because then you really, really get to see consensus. One thing is what the executive team says about the company and its brand and its message and their dramatic difference versus what do customers and past customers and other employees say about your brand. That's a fascinating process, because one of the things that you always reach, for the most part, is consensus. And the good thing is that going through that process, by the time that you're talking about marketing strategies and the channels and who your profile is, by the time that you get there, it's a slam dunk, because the client has already trusted you. You would have been having a pretty close and intimate relationship when it comes to your brand throughout this, you know, 5 weeks or so, that it makes it easier moving on forward, because we all learn a lot of things about the brand. Some things that is just validation, but something that is extremely innovative from the client point of view as well.
How do you get everybody to buy into it, though? Once you've laid this vision out and you've done your research and you said, you know, here's how people perceive you, here's how your internal staff perceives you, here's how the public perceives you, or your vendors, you've got, and all these images might not match, and now you're going to propose a cohesive vision. You're going to propose a logo and a tagline and some statements and some values in this one page that you're going to create for them. How do you turn that into a corporate Bible? How do you turn that into a corporate script? How do you get everybody to buy into that?
Yeah, there's definitely a little bit of an art to that.
I would say so. I've seen, because I'll tell you, I'll just give you a quick example. I worked with a company that's no longer around, but back, this is 20 years ago. I'm in my mid-50s here. When I was young and first in this business, I had the chance to work in what was then a pretty big account called Dayrunner. They made these paper organizers like Daytimers and Franklin and Covey and all these things that we used to, before we had computers, we had these paper organizers, right?
Yeah.
And everybody ran around with them, and they sold, you know, they were like a $50 million company and big client for me. And so I went in and did what you're talking about. I talked to the people in sales department. I talked to the people in design. I talked to the founders of the company. I talked to some of their vendors. I talked to some of the department stores that were doing them. And every single person I talked to had a different way to explain what that product was. There were no two people that even some people said it was a fashion accessory because they kind of look like purses. Some people said, oh, no, it's a way to track your calendar and your contacts, a traditional sort of organizer. Other people said, oh, no, it's a way to do, you know, control your day and run your day. It's a whole way to change your thought process. I mean, wildly different ideas. And I'll tell you, we struggled for a long time trying to get everybody on the same page. So I can appreciate what you go through.
Yeah, it's a very, very challenging. It's obviously how you pitch it, how you pitch your story, and then also how you validate it, because, you know, we don't make up what clients say.
Right.
We don't make up what your employees say. I mean, we literally use their language and their tone, and it's pretty eye-opening. And, how can you refute that, if you may?
Yeah.
And I don't think it's very humbling, but also very innovative. And that's how you build consensus. But, you know, we start differently, letting them know what was the approach, what we did. We didn't change anything. So there's a process on trying to show them that.
Yeah. Well, we are privileged to have on this network, we do about 20 different shows, and one of them is called Branding Business. It's on Tuesdays at 3 o'clock here in the Pacific time. And it's hosted by, again, a company much like yours, a branding company here in Southern California called Rikus Baird. And one of the things that I've taken away as I've helped engineer and produce that show, they've talked to various people, Oakley Sunglasses and all these other big companies here in Southern California. And one of the things that they've said that I never really thought of before, and I get kind of interested to hear your take on this, is that they refuse to even take on a project unless the CEO, unless the C-suite is firmly behind this. Because otherwise, they're just going to gather all this information and end up arguing with them. How do you feel about that?
It's actually a very valid point. You need to have the buy-in of the C team, and it's the same for us. If we can't get the C team for interviews and things of that nature, then it's going to really dampen and not allow us to get the success that we can have.
And that's hard to understand because, you know, these people are busy, the people either that founded the company or the people now that they've been turned over, if it's a public company and they're running it, the CFO and the CEO and the CMO and all these people. And their contention, I really had to think about this, is unless you start at the top, that brand starts at the top, if those people can't come up with a clear-cut vision, then the people down the food chain are sure as heck not going to get it here or adopt it. And yet, on the other hand, I will say I've seen lots of corporate marketing plans, rebranding programs where companies spend a lot of money and time with companies like yours, and then when they put it out, either the public doesn't buy it or like it, or the employees fight it. You know, it's old Coke versus new Coke. You know, I don't want that new logo. I don't want that new image here or something. You were going to say, yeah. So how do you carry that through to the whole chain here?
Well, the buy-in, I mean, it definitely starts top down. You know, there's a saying in Germany that the fish dies by its head. So the head of the company needs to lead the pack and believe in it. But, you know, we don't like to talk about any marketing plan or strategy, roll it out to the public without the internal buy-in completely of the company. Hence why we interview staff and employees at all levels of the company. And before we even ever roll it out to anybody outside of the company, we have an internal rollout.
So the entire okay.
We tell them the process and what we did and what did we go through and why we went through what we went through. And we do a complete rollout. I mean, we've actually done this as a publicly traded company. And then you really get the sales team engaged. And most of the time, they leave out to the marketplace extremely enthusiastic. So you want to make sure that you do all of that internally first.
Well, and the only reason I'm bringing all this up is because, one, I'm curious to hear your thoughts on it, but two, I really believe, and maybe it's because I was in that field before, so I'm a believer in it, I think you need an outside guidance. I think you need some experts to do this. I see too often that companies try and, particularly small to mid-sized companies, try and rebrand themselves or brand themselves, and all they do is end up making a mess of it.
Yeah.
Do you ever have to go in and fix somebody else's mistake here?
We do is exactly with the example that you mentioned earlier, you know, because you have the cousin and the friend and all these different...
The wife and the investors, and everybody's got a different perspective on this thing here.
Absolutely, absolutely. So, and a lot of time when you're in that situation, even more so, you want a third-party, unbiased opinion that has no emotional ties to the company, and that's how you get it done.
Yeah, well, because you're dealing with something that is very emotional. I mean, we're trying to put a finger on what's special about this company and its product or services here, and that starts to open up some interesting dialogues, particularly amongst people who probably hadn't talked about this in a while. I mean, do you work? What part of the chain do you like to focus on? Do you work with startups? Do you work with SMBs? Do you work with bigger publicly traded companies? Where you probably run the gamut, but where do you feel most comfortable? Where do most of your clients fall into?
You know, I feel most comfortable is the SMB space, or really not necessarily just the SMB space, which I do love, but it's actually the fact of having a team that's engaged that believes in branding and communication and in a strategic thought process, and that is willing to not be scared to be have a me too kind of attitude, that's willing to kind of go a little bit beyond the status quo and feeling comfortable going outside the box. I mean, those are typically the most ideal clients, the clients that you have the most fun with, and quite frankly, the ones that you tend to have much more success and
yeah,
where
right.
ROI is very, very evident. I mean, if you just kind of want to be me too and the same, and you're not willing to push the envelope to stand out and be bold about your brand, then we're just not the right fit. And if you don't believe in marketing and the process of branding and a backbone of strategic thought and research to validate everything we're thinking, then we're not going to be your client either. You know, we're not going to be the best fit for you. If you want just a cool looking logo from a graphics perspective and cool graphics, I mean, there are amazing talented people out there that would do exactly that. But that's not the value that we bring to the table.
Okay, and can you mention some of the clients that you work with? I know you have some of them on your website here. I don't know which ones you feel comfortable mentioning or which ones you focus on, but give us some examples of clients in San Antonio that you've worked with.
Absolutely. I can give some examples. Some I can't mention for confidentiality agreement purposes.
Sure, yeah. Some people don't like to admit they had to bring in a branding company. That's sort of like an admission of failure that they couldn't figure it out themselves there or something.
Yeah, I would talk to you about one that is extremely fun that we're working on right now, and it's amazing. It's called Twang. Twang Partners, they're the beer salt. They have the patent on the beer looking bottles, and you know they put the salt and they dress the beers predominantly you know, Corona and Dos Equis, and on top of that they also have the rimmers for cocktails. You know, they also have different salt, flavored salt for kids.
Unbelievable. There's a company out there that actually makes, that specifically makes bar salts for rimming on margaritas and beers and things like that. I had no idea.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So Twang is a great client. It's just amazing. And they hired us to really, really take their online presence and communication across all their channels to a different level. And it's just absolutely phenomenal because they allowed us to do research to look at consumer behavior. They allowed us to test comps on the website, of the website with audiences. And we came with an end result and a navigation that is amazing. The client was comfortable with pushing the limit. They didn't want anything that would be the expected within their industry and their vertical, if you may. So it's that's an example of just such a fun client, not to mention that the product is fun and the client is just a lot of fun. So I'm very, very proud of that. Of what we're
I'm going to have to go check it out. Where do we, what's the website? Just twang.com? Or?
But yeah, right now, yeah, but the new site is not live. We actually just showed creative morning, actually, and they just approved creative. So
Give us the secret code. We all want to see it before it goes live here. No, yeah, probably not.
I definitely have a development link, but that's amazing. And they have such a phenomenal packaging. So that was something that was a lot of fun. We've done, you know, for publicly traded, we've done Rackspace, and we've done a lot of fun projects for the Rackspace Managed Hosting, and they're such an amazing company and have such an amazing culture. That has been a lot of fun. And one that was very, very challenging was IBC Bank, just a financial institution.
Yeah, it looks like you've done a bunch of banks here. It looks like you've done more than one bank here.
Yeah, we've done multiple banks and wealth management companies and hedge funds and things of this nature. It's definitely a vertical that we have. But, you know, we also have, you know, Hyatt Corporate out of Chicago is our client. And
wow.
A lot of fun to brand. We're currently branding some hotels in Napa and in Savannah.
Can I go work on the one in Napa here? Can you sub that out to me, and I'll go work up there for a while for you here?
Absolutely, it's such a gorgeous place.
Oh, yeah.
But they all believe in research and uniqueness and the context of, you know, I love to use when we're working on these projects of a restaurant. You're creating an experience, but you're also creating a sense of place. And you have to look at the context of the culture and the architecture and the history of these places. And it's just great. And I would say one last example that was amazing, just New Orleans. We worked in the new project of Hyatt that they completely redid after Katrina, their hotel down there. Mm. And we were able to brand every single room, the conference rooms, the you know, the convention spaces, and everything had to do with the history of New Orleans and musicians and name and culture. And that was a true branding experience. And they have a QR code that if you scan it, it kind of tells you a little bit of the history.
Amazing.
And the music.
Wow.
So it really,
because they always say brand is your story. That really is a story. They've really turned it into a living story. You can go through the rooms and flash your phone in front of that QR code, and it'll actually tell you something about the story, huh?
Absolutely, absolutely. So, I mean, these are all example, and branding is telling a story. And then we've done some innovative and kind of off the beaten path things for Citrix, for example, for GoToMeeting in South by Southwest in Austin. There's so much noise, and all these people
spend so much
money, and brands spend a lot of money in South by Southwest, but it's so much noise. So we decided to kind of go, I don't know the right word in English, kind of rogue. We kind of went off our own beaten path, and then we got all of the you know, bicycle taxis with, you know, QR codes of Citrix, and then we had breakfast tacos with wrapped information about GoToMeeting with the code to use it free for 30 days. And, you know, we were able to impact and touch a lot of people without having to spend the six figures that a lot of brands try to go spend when they go to South by Southwest.
Oh, they certainly do. And it does, you know, obviously for people who have never been there, South by Southwest was started off as a music conference in Austin, or conference, a music sort of festival of new music, and now it's turned into, I haven't been there in a long time, but it seems like it's everything. Now it's more than music, it's brands, it's everything hip and cool and, you know, tied around with the music and with food and with the internet and with, I don't even know what they've added into it, but movies and other things.
Yeah, absolutely.
And all this stuff is blaring at you and screaming at you everywhere, the bands, the the skywriters, the banners, the handouts, everything. You're just flooded with stuff when you go, the T-shirts and everything else here.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's what I mean with trying to be strategic and outside the box and really do something that is meaningful. So we take a lot of pride in our work and respect our clients a lot and understand that they're putting their trust in us. And all this, we take it pretty seriously, and we want to be good stewards of their dollars.
Well, I want to be good stewards of your time here. I know you're on a cell phone, and you're going from one place to another here, not in San Antonio today. Can you stick with us for another 10 minutes or so? And I'd love to talk a little more here. This has really
Absolutely.
Caught my imagination here. We've got to take a quick break for a commercial, and we'll be right back with, and make sure I get your name, is it Jose Senna?
Correct.
I wanted to say it wrong, but I said it right. Jose Senna, from the CEO and president of Blue Clover Branding. We'll be right back with you in just a moment.
Smart Business Network is a business-to-business multimedia company providing insight, advice, and strategy for C-level executives of fast growth, middle market, and large companies. As one of the nation's largest publishers of local management journals, under the Smart Business name, Smart Business Network publishes 19 regional print editions, presents dozens of large and small-scale business conferences and award programs, and produces a vibrant interactive digital media presence. For more information, visit us at www.sbnonline.com.
Can we talk about your family business? You know, that thing you put your whole life's blood, sweat, and tears into? Well, what happens when you retire or try and pass that business on to your children? At Succession Strategies, we can help you find the answers. We'll guide you through the unsettling process of protecting your family legacy and successfully passing your business on to the next generation, safely and securely, ensuring that it'll both survive and thrive for generations to come. So ask yourself just one question. Can I really afford to wait? Take the first step. Take our complimentary self-assessment at successionstrategies.com or call us at 714-560-9022 to set up a free consultation at your convenience. That's succession-strategies.com. Succession-strategies.com. Succession planning for your family's continued success. Okay, we're back with Jose and his firm. Make sure I get the name of it right here again. I want to call it Blue Moon. I don't know why that is in my head here. Blue Clover. How did you come up with Blue Clover?
So that's typically the first question of any new client. So when we started the company, originally it was four partners. So we started thinking of four. We didn't want to be confused with anything Lucky. And at the time, almost 10 years ago, a lot of companies would go to a traditional firm to do traditional marketing into a, you know, online company or a website company to handle all their technology.
Right.
And there would always be a disconnect of the brand because techies and brandies wouldn't talk to each other.
Isn't that the truth? Isn't that true? That's why I'm going to talk about this after you explain the name. But one of the things I see is when they split these functions up, I have one company design the website because they do really cool websites with flames and stuff. And then I have another company over here does my ads because they really know how to lay stuff out and buy it right. And have somebody else do my brochures. And pretty soon it looks like three different people did it. It's three different images.
Definitely a disconnect. So when we started the firm, that's why we called it Blue Clover. Blue is, for us, is just the color of technology. Mm-hmm. So if you look at Intel, Microsoft, et cetera, it's all blue. And then clover is organic. It comes from the ground, and it's traditional. So we call it Blue Clover because it's the fusion or the synergy between traditional branding and online branding all within one umbrella. Mm-hmm. So there would not be any disconnect of the brand within our company.
And when you talked about how you will come up with, it takes 4 or 6 weeks or whatever, and you'll come up with a branding strategy here, and you'll lay this out in a very simple fashion. I think you said in a one-page summary here.
Absolutely.
Once you do that, do you collect your check and ride away, or do you help them implement that stuff? Do you create the? Do you have creative art directors, and you create the collateral material and the ads and all the other stuff?
We do. We do a lot of the execution, but not all of it. So we do help them see through. We predominantly manage the creative aspect of it. We also do most of all the online aspect of it, not just the website and the programming, but their online strategy, including mobile and social. Mm. So we see all the creative. We do all their positioning and their messaging, and we also aid them with public relations and experiential events. What we don't do is we don't do any of the media buying, none of the media negotiations. Mm-hmm. We have people that we have close relationships to that if they don't have it, we send them their web. But we stay more in the strategy, the creative, and the online, and the PR aspect of the spectrum.
I should put you in touch with a very good friend of mine from long ago. She's been doing it for a long time. She used to be an account executive for KABC Radio here and all the other big channels here, and she's had her own. She focuses mostly on radio, buying radio spots, but she also does buying television. And that's all she does is a media buyer, because most of the big firms, surprisingly like yours, have subbed that function out, whereas the big agencies used to have all that stuff in-house. That seems to be one that people have given up on. Is that just because you guys don't have the desire or the talent, or there isn't enough in it, or what?
It's for multiple reasons. I would say it's all the above. It's something that it's not our passion. I mean, we can't say we're very, very, very good at what we do. The branding process and the creative and online, we are dynamite. So we want to stick to what we know. We know that well. We know how to price it. We know where we stand. When you start bringing in media, we're getting into an area that is not our expertise. We kind of thought about it and tried it once, and it's just not what we wanted. Then once you start getting in the media and with the commissions, clients start to perceive you as not the strategic value add per se.
Yep, you just want me to buy stuff so you make money. Right.
Exactly. And then it also, quite frankly, from a business perspective, it skews your margin, because a lot of that money doesn't go to you. I mean, it goes to pay the media. So now that you work within, you know, XYZ margin, and then you bring all the media dollars, it significantly dilutes your margin. It just makes your finances look bad. So it's just something that we just decided early on that we didn't want to do, and we didn't want to do a traditional agency model. As a matter of fact, we've never called ourselves an agency whatsoever.
Interesting. All right. That's something we could spend an hour talking about, because it's a fascinating subject to me. The agency business that you see when you watch, I love to watch the show Mad Men, because there's the traditional ad agency as it was born in the 1960s here, in the 50s and 60s. That agency model has really been under attack for 20 years. And it used to be that there were these massive agencies, for those that don't know, and they had everybody in-house. They had the media buyers and the art directors and in those days they used to actually produce their own programs and stuff. You know, the Procter & Gamble put on their own, that's why they called them soap operas, because they were sponsored by the soap companies. And, I mean, they did everything. And then bit by bit, that model started to fall apart. And over time, you now see, I don't know what they are, like you. I mean, you're these hybrids of all those different functions.
Well, the thing is, because, you know, you've been forced to change, because our world has changed. And
sure has.
The world's not the same. Things force you to think differently post the economic recession that we have had. And, you know, that no longer you need these swanky offices that are just amazing. With, you know, ad agencies spend a lot of money with having offices on, you know, Madison Avenue and Fifth Avenue. We would have the latest and coolest, you know, Herman Miller
furniture is right. $1,000 a chair and everything, just
exactly,
so they can.
Exactly. And, you know, nowadays you don't need any of that. I mean, people are thinking of solutions and strategies, and they don't care. And then because of the economy, you now have all these individuals that perhaps were, you know, getting paid six figures in these big firms that now our strategic consultants that, you know, work out of their homes.
Right.
And you get them, you know, for much less because that's how it is.
And a lot of it was client-driven, too, because they got tired of paying those agency overrides. Everything had 15% added onto it here.
Absolutely. So now you go to meeting a lot. Clients don't mind if you have a virtual office. They just want to make sure that you deliver
right.
and that you have results and solutions. And so the world has changed. And it has definitely hit the industry, but you need to adapt and move on if you want to survive.
Do you ever watch the show Pitch? I think it's on Bravo, where they talk.
I have not.
Watch it if you haven't. It's fascinating. It's every week they have a client, and it's usually a pretty big client, like Sky Vodka or something like that. And they're looking for a new ad agency, and they bring in two ad agencies. And these are, I guess, they must be some of the more big. I'm out of the business so much that I don't really know who's hot and who's not anymore here. But they bring in these agencies, and then they lay out the problem. And these guys, and you watch these two teams go back and brainstorm, and then they both make their presentation, and one of them gets the job. It's real life pitching for clients on television. It's kind of wild. And one of the things that struck me is that a lot of the agencies that get called in are not in on Madison Avenue anymore. They're in North Carolina. They're in San Antonio. They're in what used to be secondary markets. Do you find that and yet here you're telling me you've worked with Hyatt Hotels out of Chicago. Does it matter that you're in San Antonio anymore, or is it an advantage? Is it a disadvantage? Talk about that a little bit.
No, I think it doesn't really matter anymore. I think that if you're speaking Hispanic advertising, I think that San Antonio still matters, not like it used to anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But really, I don't think that the client, that doesn't matter. They want to be with the right team that could deliver, that they feel that they have chemistry with, and that's going to have their best interest in mind. And once you pass, you know, the smell test, then it's a matter of if they like you. You know, people like doing business with people that they like. And I don't think that location matters anymore. And you're exactly right. I've seen a lot of companies in from secondary markets pitching, you know, General Motors.
Yeah,
and,
right.
You know, JCPenney's. And that's not your typical big agency name that you would expect to see, you know, Ogilvy or, you know, McCann, and like, you know, it's not like that anymore.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And sometimes they're bringing in more than one agency because they're splitting up the work. They're not giving them one contract for everything because everything is more than just buying newspaper and television, you know, like they used to do. It's social media. It's all this other kind of stuff out here. I was curious to see that you guys do public relations. That's not a function I usually see brought into the mix. And that was my specialty. PR seems to be one that still stays outside of the mix. Most advertising, branding, marketing companies don't include public relations, in my experience.
Yeah, it's definitely very unique. You know, it started with our clients requesting it, and then we kind of started outsourcing, and then we decided to bring it in-house. And, you know, it's 17% of our overall revenue.
Wow, there you go.
We've been blessed with having a director of public relations for over 5 years now. And she does a phenomenal job, and we think that is absolutely crucial. And we love PR because it's a great way for us to show ROI. We leverage a lot of our clients' buys and our relationship with the outlets. And nowadays, PR is not just having relationship with what you would think of traditional media, but then you also have to do bloggers' relations and things online that are important to the brand. And
absolutely,
we take that pretty seriously, so hence we've always kept PR in the mix, and we love it because it's very easy for us to show ROI on it.
I think it's smart too, because from what I can observe, as social media has started to rear its head, I won't say ugly head, but for a lot of businesses it's still an ugly head here. They don't know what the heck, why they're doing it except everybody else is doing it. But as they get into social media, nobody else in the marketing world wanted to really touch it. The marketing people don't know how to measure it. The advertising people don't think there's no money in creating YouTube videos or writing a blog or any of that stuff. So the ad agencies usually don't touch it. The marketing people usually poo-poo it because they can't measure it. And so it falls, in many cases, to PR agencies. It's almost been a windfall for PR agencies who now have another function within this process, which is to manage this customer communication, which is how I tend to view social media. It's a conversation that you're having. And PR people are the most adept at creating those conversations and continuing those conversations and monitoring and measuring those conversations. So I think it's very smart in your part to do that, and I'm surprised more companies don't do that.
Well, thank you. We appreciate that.
What, in the few minutes we have left here, we always like to ask the tough questions, too, here. What's the challenges like you face as a business these days? I can see lots of opportunities. You're a branding company that's now doing PR. That itself is, and you said it's 17% of your revenue now. That's a phenomenal new opportunity that traditional ad agencies or branding companies didn't take advantage of. What's the flip side of it? What's the problem these days? What's the...
The problem these days is there are multiple. One, clients expect more for less.
Yeah.
So budgets have been significantly shrunk.
You got to work harder for the same amount of money here, right?
Absolutely. You do that, and you have to do that, and hence you need to make sure that you're very efficient. You have to have a very clear process within your company and be as efficient as possible, always keeping in mind, the client first. So, clients are expecting Rolls Royce for Hyundai prices, and,
right.
That's a challenge. And the thing is that they have a lot of leverage, right? Because then you could always find somebody down the street that will do it anyway.
Exactly. And that's the problem. When you got all these people that there's no sort of certification. Anybody can hang out a shingle and say, I'm a branding expert. I'm a marketing expert.
Absolutely. So, obviously we trade on our reputation, and most of our business is referral.
Right.
But that's a challenge. The other challenge, of course, is finances. The banks are not as easy as back in the 2005 2006 eras, where you could get easily a line of credit and it was just much easier. So banks are tighter. That forces you to be very, very tight with your money, and you just have to be very, very conservative, and you have to assume that there's no other bucket for you to access. So it's challenging in our business to make sure that you really, really know how to manage cash flow properly, and understanding that there's no other means of access to money from traditional banks. So you have to be very good at your business and, rely on the money that you make from your client. So that definitely poses a challenge. And I would say last but not least, we already kind of alluded a little bit to it, you have a lot of talented people in the marketplace that lost their job predominantly from big companies that had shrinkage.
Yep, big agencies, and there's a ton of freelancers out on the streets now.
Freelancers. So now you, in essence, don't even need to have a team because you could do all your duties virtually.
Yeah.
And bring the teams when you need them for the right account. So now all of these things create a challenge and force our industry as a whole to reinvent themselves.
Is this a good time to be in branding or marketing in general, or has it suffered because of the economy? And I'll back up and say, in traditional business thinking, it was not, I never agreed with it, but when business pulled back in the past, the first thing they cut back on was their marketing. They're not going to run as many ads. They're not going to do as much PR. They're not going to do all this stuff. They're just going to hunker down and hold on and wait for better times. Is that still the case, or is the reverse happening?
A lot of companies do that, unfortunately. It's not the right approach, but at the same time, we have to be cognizant of the financial situation, right?
Right.
So those companies that were very smart with their money, and, cash is king, or, he who has the most gold calls the shot. So those
right.
brands that had a lot of liquidity and reserve now have the ability to take significant market share because they could bump up their marketing spending and their brand and their recognition and their experiential events in the marketplace,
mm-hmm.
when others that have to be very, very tight haven't. So I still think that for those that have the cash, this is such a great opportunity. But the reality is that unfortunately, yes, a lot of companies cut the marketing budget when times are tight.
you mentioned one thing that I think is a fascinating counterargument to that, and that is, okay, so everybody's cutting back, so I'm going to cut back here too. But if you spend, if you actually increase during these times, if you can, and invest in these times, you can grab market share so that when the market does come back, all these other people who've been absent from the newspapers and the media and the events and all that, and people, their brand has faded from thought, you can step in and actually build market share so that when times get better, you've now got 25% of the market instead of 10% when you went into the recession.
Exactly.
I read once that's what Dell did, in not this recession, but previous recession, where they actually had cash hoarded, and they went out and consciously not only cut prices to undercut their competitors, but they invested heavily in marketing programs and of all sorts. And the idea was, our competitors are down. We're really going to step up our game here so that when it comes, and even if we lose money during this period of time, so that when the market comes back, we will have more dealers, more customers, more awareness, more brand equity here.
Absolutely.
Fascinating stuff here. Well, I could go on forever about this, and it sounds like you guys have are definitely at the forefront of reimagining all of this, how it all fits together and how you work with customers and how you get more for less and all those good things. How do people get in touch with you if they want to learn more about Blue Clover?
Absolutely. Well, obviously in blueclover.com, and they could also, you know, give us a call at 210-223-5409. And I would love to welcome talk to anybody who's listening to the show and anybody in your group. We love to share our knowledge and our you know, wealth of information, if you may, with anybody that calls, that we could help make a difference in the world or just in our own vertical. So,
are you active on social media? Can we find you on Twitter and Facebook and LinkedIn and all those kind of things too?
Yeah, you know, I'm definitely on LinkedIn. So Jose Sun is in LinkedIn. My business partner Juan Barrera is so much better than I am on Twitter. Everybody kind of picks their thing. So. Mm-hmm. I am in Twitter. I mean, I'm you know, at the Jose Senna, but I'll be honest, I'm not as aggressive in Twitter. I'm much more in Facebook or LinkedIn than I am in Twitter.
But well, we'll have to get you into internet radio and podcasting and all this kind of stuff here more too, because this is, I think, another social medium that's really exploding as well. People on the internet don't want to read as much as they want to listen or watch stuff here. That's
absolutely,
my opinion.
Absolutely. And it's all about sharing and sharing meaningful.
That's what it is. That's what it is. You know, I was startled when I saw that Edelman, the largest PR firm in the world, I think they still are, recently hired some executive producers from the BBC. And I thought, what the heck is a TV or radio producer doing working for a PR firm? Well, what they're doing is they're now creating content where they're not just, you're not just hiring Edelman or other PR firms just to go out and for their connections and their ability to sell your story for someone else to write it or tell it. They're actually using the new social mediums to tell the stories themselves through YouTube videos and podcasts and blogs and, you know, online newspapers and the thousand other things that you can do. You really can become your own media company.
Absolutely. Well, I welcome it any kind. So I would more than happy to do so.
All right. Fascinating stuff. Thank you for joining us today here. You've been listening to Critical Mass Coast to Coast, and we invite you to join us each and every week at this time as we talk to different people in different industries in different parts of the country, all trying to find out, what are they doing different these days to survive and thrive in these crazy times here? Thank you so much. We'll be back next week with some more guests. And thank you, Jose, for joining us.
Thank you. I greatly appreciate Critical Mass and the audience and your time.
Okay. All right. All right, ladies and gentlemen, that wraps us up for today. We want you to stick around because we got a lot more programming coming your way today on OC Talk Radio. Let's wrap up by reminding you that OC Talk Radio is a community radio station trying to bring together the business community throughout the country here and in Southern California.